Okay, let's turn to Leviticus chapter 26. And in this chapter, towards the end of the book of Leviticus, we have a blessings and curses pattern, which reminds us of the central section of suzerain vassal treaties in the ancient Near East that we've already alluded to. I'm not going to cover the whole of the chapter, I just want to bring out some truths here. It would be well, for those of you that want to look into this a little bit more, that you read the whole of chapter 26 and you read it in tandem with Deuteronomy chapters 28 through 30. Now we're going to go to Deuteronomy 30 a bit later, but in Deuteronomy 28 and 29 you have that blessings and curses episode when the peoples of Israel split up and shouted the blessings and curses of God back to one another on the two mountains, Mount Ebal and Mount Gerizim. And then chapter 30 that we'll look at is a prediction of the future of Israel, which corresponds to what is said in verses 40 and following in Leviticus 26. And so there's a correspondence between this chapter and Deuteronomy 28 through 30. But if you'll look here with me at Leviticus 26, we'll start at verse 3. If you walk in my statutes and keep my commandments and perform them, then I will give you. And then there's a whole list of the blessings that God will give to an obedient people. These blessings include rain in verse 4, abundant grain, grapes and fruit, verse 4, an abundance of food, verse 5, safety, verse 5, which means that they will live in peace, verse 6, and they will have rest and won't be looking over their shoulders, verse 6. God will also give them protection from wild animals and from enemies, verses 6 and 7, giving them protection from invading armies, the sword, verse 6 and verse 7. He will also give them abilities to fight against their enemies, if need be, verse 8. The nation will grow strong, verse 9, with a mention there of my covenant with you. And then verse 10, you'll eat the old harvest, but you'll have to clear it out because you'll be bringing a new harvest in on top of it. So that notes the abundance that God is going to provide in the land, verse 10. And then verses 11 and 12, God himself will be with them. And then you have this covenant pronouncement, I will walk among you and be your God, and you shall be my people. And then you have words of warning from verses 14 through to verse 39. And we don't need to go through all of those, but they have to do with distress, drought, beasts, disease, famine, and eventual dispersion as invading armies come upon the nation of Israel and overcome them. And then we get to this very important section in verses 40 through 45. And let's pay attention to that. But, verse 40, if they confess their iniquity and the iniquity of their fathers, with their unfaithfulness in which they were unfaithful to me, and that they also have walked contrary to me, and that I also have walked contrary to them, and have brought them into the land of their enemies, if their uncircumcised hearts are humbled, and they accept their guilt, then, verse 42, I will remember my covenant with Jacob, and my covenant with Isaac, and my covenant with Abraham I will remember. And then look at what he says here. I will remember the land. You can't get away from the connection of Israel with the land, folks. It's there. God keeps repeating it. It's interesting that in verse 42, the Abrahamic covenant is shown in a kind of retrogressive way. Jacob being mentioned, then Isaac, and then back to Abraham. And that is probably because Jacob, of course, is the father of Israel. He's the one who was named Israel by God. And then Isaac was not an Israelite, and Abraham was not an Israelite. They were the father and grandfather of Jacob, the first Israelite, if you like. And so the covenant in verse 42 is the Abrahamic covenant, again, not the Mosaic covenant. Now this word remember, by the way, in the Hebrew, does not mean that God has forgotten and all of a sudden he recalls it to mind. No, it means that God, at the right time, will provide for. God's going to act for or on behalf of. That's the idea. And then in verse 43, God speaks about the land itself. The land also shall be left empty by them and will enjoy its Sabbaths while it lies desolate without them. Now, this is mentioned in chapter 25, where God commands the Israelites to let the land have its Sabbath. In other words, to leave it fallow every 7 years so it may rest. And if they don't do that, he's going to throw them out of the land so the land can rest. And in fact, one of the things that was accomplished by the dispersion of the tribes of Judah in 586 BC was, according to 2 Chronicles 36, 20 and 21, that the land enjoyed her Sabbaths for 70 years. The land lay desolate. So it was almost as if God was keeping count of, well, the year of Jubilee, actually, as you'll see in Leviticus 25, that was not kept by the Israelites, and he was counting them up until finally he took them into captivity and he gave the land the accumulation or aggregate of every seventh year that the land should have remained fallow and rested. But anyway, back to Leviticus 26 and verse 43. The land also shall be left empty by them and will enjoy its Sabbaths while it lies desolate without them. They will accept their guilt because they despised my judgments and because their soul abhorred my statutes. Yet for all that, verse 44, when they are in the land of their enemies, we've read this before in Deuteronomy 4, I will not cast them away, nor shall I abhor them, to utterly destroy them and break my covenant with them. For I am the Lord their God. Notice that. What's my covenant? Verse 44. My covenant is the covenant mentioned in verse 42, the Abrahamic covenant. Verse 45. But for their sake I will remember the covenant of their ancestors, whom I brought out of the land of Egypt in the sight of the nations, that I might be their God. I am the Lord. Now the ancestors here are not this people in Leviticus who are still at Mount Sinai hearing these things. It is a reference to the ancestors of these people who were in Egypt and therefore were under the Abrahamic covenant, not the Mosaic covenant. So you can see here that God is going to have to do something. He says, if they turn, I'm going to bless them. He's not going to forget his covenant with them. Now, his covenant with them is to bring all of these blessings to them. But how is God going to do that? Well, we have a reference to that in Deuteronomy chapter 30. So let's turn there. Deuteronomy chapter 30. And we're going to look at this chapter and go through it quite quickly, but bring out some important truths out of it. We'll start then at verse 1. Now it shall come to pass, when all these things come upon you, the blessing and the curse which I have set before you. Now that's the blessing of the curse that you read in chapters 28 and 29. And you call them to mind among all the nations where the Lord your God drives you, and you return to the Lord your God and obey his voice, according to all that I command you today, you and your children, with all your heart and with all your soul, that the Lord your God will bring you back from captivity and have compassion on you and gather you again from all the nations where the Lord your God has scattered you. Now the northern tribes were taken into captivity by the king of Assyria in 722 BC. We read about that in 2 Kings 16 and 17. And the two southern tribes, named Judah, were taken into captivity by Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, finally in 586 BC. And they, of course, endured a 70-year captivity and came back under Ezra and Nehemiah. and by the way, included in the southern tribes that came back from Babylon to Israel after the 70-year captivity, were peoples also of the 10 northern tribes, because at the time of the Assyrian invasion in 722 BC, many families from the 10 northern tribes came down to the south to live there, so that the 10 northern tribes have not been lost. They were included in the people that were taken into captivity in 586 BC and that came back after that 70 years captivity. That's important to note. Now that's what he's talking about. That's the captivity of Deuteronomy 30 verse 3. Now verse 4, if any of you are driven out to the farthest parts under heaven, from there the Lord your God will gather you, and from there he will bring you. Then the Lord your God will bring you to the land which your fathers possessed, and you shall possess it. He will prosper you and multiply you more than your fathers. Now the fathers here are not the patriarchs, because they didn't possess the land. They just lived in it. This is the people that went into the land and possessed it and reigned over it. What we've got so far, therefore, is that God will drive them out of the land for disobedience. And we know that that happened in the captivities. But there was also, of course, another captivity when Israel was driven out of the land under the Romans, under Hadrian, in the 2nd century AD. And they didn't get the land back until 1948. Now this is important in light of what is going to be said in verse 6 and following, and I want you to note it. Because in verse 5, God is going to bring them back from their dispersion, and then verse 6, once they've been brought back, God's going to do something to them. And the Lord your God will circumcise your heart and the heart of your descendants to love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul, that you may live. Now notice that this is something that God is going to do. God is going to circumcise their hearts. God is going to give them what we may properly call a spiritual rebirth. And why does he need to do that? Well, he needs to do that for them in the same way that he needs to do it for us. If he didn't, then we wouldn't obey. We would go off on our own way. We would neglect God. We would not be obedient. We would not be spiritual people. God has to come to us. And God comes to them on the basis of the covenant that he's made with them, with, of course, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So this, of course, in verse 6, is an important marker. When did this happen? Well, it doesn't appear to have happened under Ezra and Nehemiah, as great as those men were. There was certainly some obedience, but there was a lot of disobedience and apostasy. And the land, by the way, was never really their land. The king of Persia, Cyrus, allowed them to go back to the land, but the land was never really theirs. After the Persians came the Greeks. After the Greeks came the Romans, with the Seleucids also, the Syrians, under Antiochus Epiphanes in there for a while. And the Romans, of course, as we've just said, dispersed the Jews from Israel. They renamed Israel Palestine under Hadrian, and Jews were not allowed back into Jerusalem, which they renamed Aiola Capitolina. So this regeneration of Deuteronomy 30 verse 6 wasn't under Nehemiah and Ezra, and it certainly wasn't in the time of Jesus, was it? They crucified him, after all. Was it in 1948? Well, no. The great majority of Jews are Christ-rejecting Jews. So when will this be? Well, we will go into this more in the second part of the course, but the place that this fits is when God makes the new covenant with Israel. And he will do that at the second coming of Christ. Because, you see, according to Revelation chapter 12, in the tribulation, Israel again will be dispersed from the land. You have it in that figurative passage where the Satan, as a dragon, chases the woman into the wilderness. So she's being chased out of the land. The woman there is Israel, as we will see, and as any cross-reference to Genesis 36 and the dream of Joseph will tell you. and the woman is being chased to the wilderness and then is being kept for a time by God. But Israel has undergone great tribulation at that time, tribulation that Jesus spoke about in Matthew 24. Now we'll go into this more, of course, at the right time. But you see that in Matthew 24 and in Revelation 12, Israel is driven out of the land again. And then they are brought back, and then they are regenerated. And we see this illustrated very clearly in the prophet Ezekiel, in Ezekiel 36 and 37, which again we will study in the next course. And so it appears to be that Israel will be brought back to the land as unregenerate, not as regenerate, as disobedient people by God, and once they're in the land, they will be regenerated. Now, as an aside, does this mean that 1948 and the re-establishment of the land of Israel has no biblical significance? No, it doesn't, because this is clearly in the providence of God that God has brought them back into the land. And he's brought them back in preparation for what he's going to do in the future. And we don't know when, maybe in the not too distant future, when they will undergo what is known in Jeremiah chapter 30 as the time of Jacob's trouble, or the tribulation, and then they will be regenerated, born again, in fulfillment of Deuteronomy chapter 30 and verse 6, and many other places. Now, it doesn't say it here, but we know from other places in Scripture, especially from Jeremiah 31:31 and following, that this regeneration of Israel in Deuteronomy 30, verse 6, is the regeneration that happens under not the Mosaic covenant, but the new covenant, the covenant that replaces the Mosaic covenant. And the church is already under the new covenant. Jesus made the new covenant with the church, and we celebrate that in the Lord's Supper, according to Paul in 1 Corinthians chapter 11. But he has not made that same new covenant with Israel, but he will do at his second coming. Again, we'll say much more about this in the second course. But what's important to grasp here is that according to Deuteronomy chapter 30 and verse 6, God himself is going to do something to make Israel obedient. And we've noticed, by the way, in Deuteronomy 4 and the Pentateuchal poems that we studied, that this is going to happen in the latter days. Now, look at verse 7 of Deuteronomy 30. Also, the Lord your God will put all these curses on your enemies and on those who hate you and persecuted you. And you will again obey the voice of the Lord and do all his commandments, which I command you today. And the Lord your God will make you abound in all the work of your hand, in the fruit of your body, in the increase of your livestock, and in the produce of your land for good. For the Lord will again rejoice over you for good, as he rejoiced over your fathers. If you obey the voice of the Lord your God to keep his commandments and his statutes, which are written in this book of the law, and if you turn to the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul. Well, how are they going to do that? They're going to do it because God's going to do it for them. Okay, and then in verses 11 and following, Moses declares to the people that are in front of him, the people that are going to go into the land, he warns them, as any good spiritual leader, that they are to obey God. They are not to forget God. They are not to forget his commandments and go and worship other gods, verse 17. Because if they do, they'll perish off the land, verse 18. Then verse 19, I call heaven and earth as witnesses today against you. We read this in Deuteronomy 4, didn't we? That I have set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. That was done in Deuteronomy 28 and 29. Therefore, choose life. They have a choice. They can obey or disobey. Of course, they eventually chose to disobey, as the books of Joshua and especially Judges make very clear. Choose life that both you and your descendants may live, that you may love the Lord your God, that you may obey his voice, and that you may cling to him, for he is your life, and the length of your days, and that you may dwell in the land which the Lord swore to your fathers Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob to give them. God swore it in an oath in Genesis 15, and he is not going to go by it. Listen to me. These Christians that say that God is through with Israel, or that the land promises to Israel are not eternal and can be spiritualized somehow, they will answer to God for their disbelief of these kinds of passages, and there are very many more. God is very clear. Israel and the land belong together. They're part of the Abrahamic covenant, and God does not break his unconditional covenants. And of course, what many of these people say is that the Abrahamic covenant was conditional. And even if the Abrahamic covenant was conditional, and it wasn't, by the way, but even if it was, then those conditions were fulfilled by Abraham. So there is no excuse, therefore. Go back and read Genesis 12 through Genesis 22, and you'll see that those conditions were fulfilled. The condition, for example, of circumcision and of obedience. And so there is no excuse at all for those people that say that the land and Israel do not belong together anymore. And there are many that do it, and again, we'll have to look more into that in the next course. But moving on here, we can see that God will eventually bring Israel back to the land and give them the land that he swore in a covenant oath to give to the offspring of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Not just the people related to Abraham. We know that Jesus is the seed of Abraham, according to Galatians 3:15, and we know that we are Abraham's seed on the basis of that. That's understood. But what's important to gather is that the other aspects of the Abrahamic covenant, the ones that particularly involve Israel, the descendants of Jacob, that they are eternal and everlasting, just as the promises to the nations in Abraham are eternal and everlasting, through Jesus Christ. So it takes Jesus Christ to bring about the fulfillment of God's promises to the nations. Indeed, all the nations of the earth will be blessed through the church and blessings to the nations. And also, it takes Jesus Christ, the Jewish Messiah, to bring about eventually all the blessings promised by God to the nation of Israel. And he will do that at his second coming. And we're going to see this much more clearly, I think, in the second course, when we examine the Old Testament prophetic books and see how these covenants are spoken of by the Old Testament prophets. And from there, we'll go on and we'll look into the New Testament, and we will see how part of this covenant, the Abrahamic covenant, is fulfilled in Jesus Christ for the church, and how the Abrahamic covenant and the other covenants connected to it in the Old Testament will be fulfilled through Jesus Christ for Israel and for the nations. And so that is the prospect for course number 2.